North Idaho News of the Week is brought to you in part by Evergreen Realty, commercial and residential property listings. Online at evergreen-realty.com. Good morning. You've tuned in to North Idaho News of the Week here on 88.5 KRFY. This is Panhandle Community Radio. I'm Jack Peterson. I'm here with Chris Bessler, as usual, on Friday, October 31st. Happy Halloween, Chris.
Hey, happy Halloween, Jack. And what are you going to be tonight?
Well, I think I'm going as Captain Hook, if I can put together a costume for it.
Do you have a hook?
Yes, I have a dough hook.
That's the key thing.
Yeah. So we've got that part. That is the key thing. If it was a normal pirate, it seems like it'd be an easier costume because you kind of just dress in rags and a bandana, and maybe an eye patch. But Hook's a little bit. Yeah. It's kind of fancy.
Is this going to be used for trick or treating with James?
Yes. And guess what James is going as?
Oh, I'm going to guess Batman.
James will be going as Peter Pan.
Peter Pan.
Yep. Really? Yep.
How did he cook that idea up himself?
He did. Yeah. Oh, yeah. We've read the book a few times, or the Disney picture book.
Yeah.
He enjoyed that. So that's supposed to be our costume.
Well, I have a cowboy-ish hat and a bandana.
And I figure
that's the complete getup right there.
Will you be trick or treating, or will you be?
I'm going around with my granddaughters. Cool. I got a 5-year-old granddaughter and a 2.5-year-old. So that's the best part of Halloween right there.
Yep. I believe they're doing the downtown trick or treating again.
They are. There's a whole bunch of places that are doing that. In fact, if you look on our calendar at KRFY.org and you want to see a whole bunch of places to go take your kid trick or treating. You'll see quite a list there.
I will also introduce our guest in the studio this morning, the publisher of the Sandpoint Reader, Ben Olson.
Good morning.
Good morning, Ben. Good spooky morning to you. Thanks for coming in on Halloween. And I guess we better jump into it here, get into some of the local news, and I expect we'll probably end up talking about the local election quite a bit, but there is more going on than just that. On the national front, the federal government shutdown is currently still in place. No bills funding the government past October 1st have been put in place as of yet. Tomorrow, of course, is November 1st. As far as local effects, so far it's been mainly that federal employees, including the Forest Service, are going unpaid. Starting tomorrow, the Trump administration has said it will not tap emergency funds at the USDA to extend the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP. So starting tomorrow, SNAP benefits will stop going out to those receiving them. The Bonner Community Food Bank is open and is accepting donations, and I believe they have said that they expect to see they've already seen quite an uptick in demand, and they expect to see more, especially if SNAP benefits do, in fact, go away. A measles case has been reported in Boundary County involving a child who's not yet school age, according to officials at Boundary Community Hospital. The child had recently traveled outside the area. Hospital officials say they are working closely with public health officials to ensure all appropriate precautions are taken. Let's see here. In the county, I have the various things up for contested election on Tuesday, November 4th. That is next Tuesday, or rather this coming Tuesday, just 4 or 5 days away. In Clark Fork, Mayor Russell Schenck is running against Tanya Becker. In Dover, City Council President Kim Bledsoe and incumbent councillor Merlin Glass are facing Jerry Heaps and Hans Steidel. There will be 2 4-year seats determined among those four candidates. In Kootenai, there is 1 4-year seat on the city council. Robert Dressel and Danelle Baumgarten Pickett are running for that one seat. In the West Pondere Fire District, that's in the Priest River area, there is 1 4-year commissioner seat for Sub-District A. David A. Van Natter and Nigel Cave are running for that one seat. In Pondere, there is a 10-year 1% local option tax on the ballot. That is intended to raise funds for continued development of public access to Lake Pondere and the Pondere Bay Trail, including a railroad underpass, ongoing construction at the Field of Dreams Recreation Complex, and creation of a Field of Dreams Endowment Fund for future maintenance at the facility, as well as support for streets and stormwater projects, $500,000 designated on top of the existing streets budget that will be funded by, or would be funded by, the 10-year 1% local option tax in Pondere. Out in East Hope, there is a permanent override property tax levy on the ballot, estimated to cost $20.89 per $100,000 of taxable assessed property value per year in order to fund street maintenance and capital improvements. And in the Northside Fire District, residents will vote in favor or against of a special permanent tax levy of $1,345,410, which is up from $661,071, which is effective in fiscal year 2026 to pay for staffing and equipment and maintaining the district's operations. That's the Northside Fire District. It would result in an estimated increase of $20.20 per $100,000 of taxable assessed value per year. Let's see. Here in the city has announced that it is planning for, or preparing and planning for, winter snow removal. Fall is still in the air, but winter snows have been known to visit the Sandpoint area as early as the first weeks of November, writes the staff of the Sandpoint Reader. So to get ahead of the season, the city of Sandpoint is asking residents to clear public rights of way of basketball hoops, boats, trailers, and other obstacles to snow removal by tomorrow, Saturday, November 1st. So if you have anything on the street that's been there for a while, get it out of the way of the plows starting tomorrow, or expect at least a warning, if not a ticket. The yearly winter parking restrictions won't go into effect until December 1st, and there will be signage around town telling residents not to park their vehicles on the odd side of streets citywide unless otherwise posted. And that lasts through March. The big news in both the B yesterday, the Reader this week, and on our morning show yesterday here on KRFY is that the Panetta Theater has hired a new executive director. Heather White is the new executive director of the Panetta Theater. She originally hails from Burien, Washington, southwest of Seattle, but has lived here for several years and has taught piano at the Music Conservatory of Sandpoint. She has a artistic and a financial background that is ideally going to serve the Panetta Theater well for the time period to come. And if you want to meet Heather White a little more in depth, you've got a few options. You can read the story in the Reader, in the B, or you can listen to yesterday's morning show where we talked to her for about 15 minutes towards the end of the program, along with the board president, Sean Bain. And find that on our website, krfy.org. Let's see. There is more news. The Lakes Commission met yesterday to discuss, in, there was a economic study of Lake Ponderé that could impact the future raising and lowering of lake levels. But the results of that commission meeting will have to wait until next week because the news is not quite out on that one yet. Mm-hmm. What more would you folks like to talk about? What headlines did I miss before we get into the talk of the election, which is the main coverage, the bulk of the paper here in the Sandpoint Reader that I hold in my hands?
Well, I know the city of Sandpoint, they released a press release about fraudulent invoices targeting the planning and division customers. So there's a lot of phishing attacks.
There were actually, yeah, there were a couple. There, I mean, the city of Sandpoint, I think there was it was a Bonner County, there were a couple Bonner County departments that also had similar, maybe not phishing, but scam warnings that their name was being used in. To call residents to get information.
And yeah, I believe Washington Trust sent out a note to their customers warning them that there were some fraudulent activity trying to get people to open up their bank accounts. So it's coming from all directions, and you got to be very wary. Do not give anybody account information over the phone.
Yeah.
Bottom line.
Wire transfers are very rare unless you initiate them usually. Nobody legit ever asks you to pay anything in a gift card. Just keep those things in mind. Mm-hmm. If somebody's asking for an Apple gift card, they're probably not legit. Mm-hmm. Or they're your grandson.
Mm-hmm. Your grandson. Or maybe just your son.
Yeah. Yes.
It's kind of scary times out there. The Idaho Department of Transportation is hosting a open house on a bridge replacement out in Priest River. It's on the Highway 2 bridge, going towards Priest River, and there will be an open house on what that project will entail. The open house is
November 6th.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, Thursday, November 6th. What do you know? And that will be of interest, especially to those of us who live out in the Priest River area.
Yeah, that's actually, it's 4 to 6 p.m. at the Priest River Event Center on Thursday, November 6th.
Well, okay. It is 8:15, so we have about, if we want to, we can dive into the election. We have now, I think, on KRFY.org, you can find interviews with all four of the city council candidates for Sandpoint City Council. And you can also find interviews with Public Works Director Holly Ellis talking about the wastewater treatment plant bond in Sandpoint. And you can find an interview with Steve Geiger, the mayor of Ponderé, talking about the 1% local option tax in that city.
This week's reader has got their candidate questionnaire with the four Sandpoint City Council candidates and a bit of information on the ballot measures as well. And another place to go is Sandpoint Online's Election Central, which links up to all the interviews, including the reader's election report, and gives information on, you know, like how and where to vote. You got to be a resident of these districts that are having votes, and it's kind of hit or miss. Not every city really has a contested race, but as you rattled off there at the start, Jack, when you add in the ballot measures, it's pretty much something to vote on in all of our local cities here. Mm-hmm.
The candidate questionnaire is out. We have two here in the city of Sandpoint, two incumbents running and two challengers, I guess, would be a term you could use for somebody who's not on city council and is running for it. You have Joel Espiro and Rick Howarth, who are sitting on city council and are seeking, in Joel's case, re-election. Rick was appointed to city council, and this will be his first time running for election, but he is sitting on city council right now. The two challengers are Joe Tate and Joshua Torres, who... Joe Tate is a lifelong resident of Bonner County, other than some years spent away in the meantime, but he was born and raised here and then has lived here again since 2016. Joshua Torres has lived in Sandpoint since 2017. So, I guess you did an excellent job with the questionnaire determining the five questions you'd ask in the reader, that is, the why are you running? What steps should the city take regarding the wastewater treatment plant project? And do you support the city's current development impact fee schedule and timeline? Will you serve on the last council? You will serve on the last council before the 2030 census, when Sandpoint will likely lose its resort city status with a population over 10,000, therefore losing its access to the local option taxing authority. How will you prepare for the loss of that revenue gathering tool? And then lastly, it was a question about the city administrator position, which was eliminated earlier in this current term. And as the question is, would you continue with a city administrator or eliminate the position in favor of a strong mayor? Which way do you lean? Let's start. If we can kind of cover two things at once here, how the city councilors feel about that wastewater treatment plant bond. I'll turn to you, Ben, and how do you characterize, I guess, their response to that question? Is everybody kind of on the same page with the bond measure?
You know, it's interesting. I've yet to actually have a substantive conversation with anybody who's against that bond. Which is it's curious, you know, because we have a lot of school levies that fail, and I think we're seeing where priorities lie right here. We will pay to have our waste flushed away, yeah. And I think it's an interesting question, because this bond, if it fails, it just kind of means it's going to happen eventually. Like there, and so the city is trying to get a lot of information out there. Speaking on behalf of, you know, the bond passing, you know, saying Mayor Grimm has, you know, he has rung the bell about this plant, basically held together with baling twine and duct tape, mm-hmm. Or plumber's tape, if you will. And so this bond would allow the city to borrow, you know, up to that $130 million to replace and modernize the plant. And everyone pretty much on the council, in the council race agrees, you know, it needs to be replaced. The question lies in what happens if the voters do not pass this, this bond. And that's going to get interesting, because there are some options. I know Rick Howarth outlined an option at the forum, how, you know, a private company could come in and build the bond, but, you know, ratepayers are going to pay for that as well. You know, there's some ideas from some other candidates about, you know, soul searching why that would be the case. But I think by and large, that bond is one of the more, I haven't seen any sort of election or ballot material that I've been pretty sure it's going to pass. I don't know. I mean, my spidey sense says that the voters will pass that, because we know it has to happen. And so most of the candidates all the candidates are on the side of, let's get it passed. And if it doesn't pass, let's see how we can get it over the finish line. Yes, it's an interesting, I mean, it's an old plant, and Zach and Sansre, took a tour of it, I believe this spring, and you know, the way they came back, it was like they saw a haunted house. the pictures, you know, just, you know, there's wrenches tying into these, you know, valves that hold things open. And it kind of, it's got a steampunk nature to that plant, where it's held together for many, many years.
Yeah. Well, and you've heard that when there's a rain on snow event, the flow into the plant can like exceed by up to 10 times what the plant is regularly prepared to do. And that just sounds what a nightmare to be working there during that time.
Yeah, and that's the reality is we have a lot of rain on snow events.
Yeah,
and in the last decade, we've kind of we've transitioned out of the hard winters into, you know, we get a snowfall and then a lot of rain on top of that snow, and you know, that's the reality. And so I think it is smart for Sandpoint to finally address this problem. It's not the most flashy thing to put on the ballot. It's like kind of like getting your oil changed in your car. You never really see it. You don't notice the difference, but it has to happen.
Yeah,
that's interesting that there isn't any organized opposition to it. Even the Bonner County Central Committee, Republican Central Committee, has been quiet about it, and they tend to reflexively oppose any kind of tax increase. This isn't actually a tax, but it's similar. The cost of this is going to be borne by ratepayers. It's not added to the tax bill. But the other part that's kind of interesting to me is that there hasn't been a big group that's organized in favor of it. Typically, advocates for a big public infrastructure thing like this, like for Memorial Field, when there was the big push to pass in Sandpoint the local option tax, because that was going to fund the renovation of Memorial Field and new grandstands there. There was a big citizen group that went out and canvassed hard for it. They went door to door. There was material, you know, printed materials in favor of it. City itself can't do that. They can't advocate in favor. But what they could have got together was a group of citizens that, you know, are concerned about the environment or concerned, I don't know, business people that say, hey, we got to do this or else we're going to face some problems. They haven't done that. So it remains to be seen if voters are, you know, informed on the issue and they're going to feel comfortable with voting for a big increase, but kind of a necessary one, right?
Yeah, that's the wild card, you know, because we're kind of in an age, the last few elections, where voters have, you know, not every time, but they have sort of started leaning away from the extra tax and the the added tax. And so it's interesting to see if that will take place here, because you're right, Chris, there wasn't any sort of organized support group. There were a couple of private events at homes. I know Molly O'Reilly had something where a couple dozen people came over and talked. So people have been trying to share the information, and we've had, you know, a couple of op-eds in the Reader about it. But yeah, it is curious. I feel like I'm my crystal ball looking. I'm saying, yeah, it's going to pass. I'm pretty sure. But then, you know,
feels like it is, just because nobody's saying a word against it. Really,
I know. I mean, we oppose everything. So there's an opposition group for everything in the world. So the fact that there's not some big opposition to this just tells me that's probably going to pass. But it's up to the voters. And if you haven't voted yet, make sure you remember to vote on Tuesday, November 4th. Just my obligatory plug for voting.
Yeah, the bond issue is and that's not a direct tax. And I know that they have said that if the bond should pass, that will, I don't exactly remember, somebody, maybe one of you is more eloquent on this subject than I am, but they've said that if the bond should pass, that will actually enable them to go for other grants that would go towards funding this. That will make it easier for them to get money from elsewhere. It's not just the, it's not going to, it will actually end up falling less, ideally less, on the ratepayers themselves than it would be if the bond issue were not to pass.
I think that's the nuance that I've taken out of this, is the fact that if the bond is passed, the city then has the option to seek other funding and to go for other grants and try to mitigate that ratepayer, you know, the shoulder, the weight on their shoulders. So bottom line is rates are going to go up whether it passes or not. But I think the ratepayers will shoulder some of this burden. But the question is how much?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, hopefully the city is successful in going out and finding other funding sources to contribute to this. They're probably not going to find a funding source that takes care of all of it. But but hopefully, fingers crossed, they'll find something out there that will take some of the weight off the residents.
Yeah, I mean, some of the numbers that Mayor Grimm was talking about at the forum were kind of scary. You know, he said that if they have to, if it doesn't pass, you know, it could represent up to 5% of, you know, of monthly income to cover your sewer and water bill. And I was doing the math there. I mean, that's a lot of money. Well, that's
huge. If it doesn't pass.
If it doesn't pass.
Yeah. That's right, because it's like six times as much for the city to then address it. But in the question, I think, that was posed in the reader, I think they all kind of said we'd take another shot at it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it's going to be one of those things where if it doesn't pass in the off chance, I don't think this is the end of this issue.
It's not going to be the end because it's got to be addressed one way or another. So.
Okay. How about the local or the, it's not exactly the, any particular local option tax, but the resort city status. This is probably the last, in the last years of having a chance to use the resort city status to pass a local option tax.
That's available only to cities of, under 10,000 population. And we are going past that. And the whole, aside from that, is the law actually expiring on that, Ben?
It's not necessarily expiring, but there's a chance to get our representatives involved, to possibly extend it, you know,
to actually increase the population
limit. Cap.
Yeah. And actually they have talked about that for some years. Right now I think, in the question, it's interesting. Like Joel mentioned, yeah, we want to get the legislators on board and make this a statewide thing. But it seems like the obvious answer there that some of the other candidates brought up was that, well, that's it. We don't get the census report until 2030. So we actually have next year to try to bring the local option tax before our Sandpoint voters again, before there's an official census count that puts us over 10,000. And that seems logical, but, you know, it's appetite for any kind of thing that has the word tax on it is the question. It didn't pass when they tried to pass that. Was it just a year ago?
It was 2024, I believe.
Yeah, 2024. And it had been in place and approved 5 years earlier for a 5-year term that expired the year before last. The question would be, do the voters see the benefit of the 1% local option tax? And the big thing in its favor, which Steve Geiger, since this Hondre is putting that question before their voters right now in this election, is that the tax collects money from people from outside town that do any kind of purchases inside the town. So it effectively leverages the money that Sandpoint residents are going to pay because all the people from outside city limits, from Bonner County and tourists, everything they buy is contributing to the funds raised by that 1% local option tax. And that's a point that Mayor Geiger made for the Pondere local option tax. It's going to be on the ballot for Pondere residents on Tuesday.
This is, as an aside, Chris, you talked to the mayor of Pondere. How do you feel? Do you think that local option tax has a better chance this time around? That one failed as well.
It needs a 60% majority, which is actually different from the bond measure in Sandpoint. It only needs a 50% plus one to pass. The local option tax needs a 60%. And so they have a bigger hurdle to pass there. It's an interesting thing there because it's a low-key election there. It's the only thing for people in Pondere to vote on. There aren't any city council races that are contested. So it's going to really be like who's motivated to get out and vote on one thing. So I personally think that probably increases the chances of it. And he did mention, you know, the 1% local option tax that's expiring there funded some really major projects there, including the Field of Dreams in Pondere, which is blossomed into this terrific sports complex after laying fallow for, I don't know, 20 years or more since it was first acquired and had no money to develop it. And if the 1% local option tax passes in Ponderay, there will be that opportunity to have money to continue development of that, and also actually give Ponderay access to their lakefront.
Yeah.
Ponderay's got a bunch of lakefront property, but you have to trespass and go over the railroad tracks to get there. If the lot passes, they're going to be able to put in and use that money to put in an underpass. Mm-hmm. And there will actually be a legal access for residents of Ponderay to get to the lake. So it seems like there's a lot of reasons why you would vote for it, especially in Ponderay, because they have those big box stores, and what residents pay is just a fraction of what everybody else pays to shop there.
Yeah.
And all that money from people outside of Ponderay city limits is what is really giving them the money to do these projects.
Right.
Yeah. And I think the opening of that complex, the phase one of Field Dreams complex, I think that's the biggest selling point for that local option tax for Ponderay voters, because they got to actually see, you know, their dollars turn into something. And, you know, I was there at the opening, and it was amazing. It was a great community gathering. And so I think that that alone is going to help propel that over if it passes. I think that had a lot to do with it, because I think a lot of times people have conceptualized ideas of what their tax money is going into, but when you can actually see it's, you know, building this for the community, that's a huge boon. And so yeah, they've got the next phases to do on the complex, and they've got the underpass, and you know, there's some streets and stormwater improvements as well. So yeah, that's it's a 10-year 1% local option tax there in Ponderay.
And they don't, they are way miles away from hitting a population limit there, because they're way under 10,000 population. So
right.
That's not a factor.
Yeah. Let's see here. Let's in our last few minutes, actually, our time grows short here. We've got two incumbents and two challengers. Actually, you know, if I recall correctly, it was not until really like the last day or the last couple days before the filing deadline that we ended up with four candidates. It was almost just going to be an uncontested election.
It's an interesting group, because I feel like most of the candidates are in agreement about most issues. The only issue that I saw people differ on was the impact fees for developers. You know, Rick Howarth kind of broke from the pack there and said that he, you know, did not support the increase of impact fees when it was brought before council a few months ago.
He thought that the amount that was raised should have been smaller, and also that should have been a longer timeline before it kicked in. It's going to kick in January.
But, it's also worth noting that he does work in development. So, it's interesting to see that one differ there. But all the other candidates said basically, you know, paraphrasing, that growth should pay for growth. The candidates they're kind of aligned with most of their positions.
Yeah.
Some have stronger positions on the city than others, but
they all seem like good guys, frankly, to me. And I think it would probably, if I were voting in the city, I live just outside the city limits. I don't get to. But if I were, I would probably look at their qualifications and how hard I thought they might work at it. You know, I will say also that all these guys are available by email, or some of them by phone, and you could ask them questions yourself. We're a small town still.
Participatory democracy is alive and well. Yeah.
And there are links to their emails on Sandpoint Online's Election Central page if you did want to email these guys.
Yeah.
Ask them a question prior to making your vote on Tuesday.
I think I won't prognosticate on who's going to win, but I would be willing to stick my neck out and say it's going to be close. It's probably going to be decided. I mean, because there's four candidates running for three seats, I think the difference between who gets third and who gets fourth is going to be could just be like two figures, you know.
Jack, I hate to bring it up, but you do have a dollar on our office wall taped there with a note from your last election.
I'm going double or nothing this year.
And
dollar. You put another dollar down on this. What is close? We got to get some definitions.
I think it's going to be decided by within 30 votes, somewhere less than 30 votes will be the difference between who gets number three and therefore is on to city council and who gets number four.
Okay. Well, you heard it here, folks.
We'll save some space on the wall for your other $2 that you put up there.
Anyway, yeah, that's what I think. So it's, it's tight. I don't know. Anything to say about incumbency versus challengers? I agree that they all seem to have very similar positions on things, so...
You know, incumbents always have a little bit more of a leg up because unless they screw up badly while they're in office, they have name recognition. People say, they didn't drive the car over the cliff the last time. So, but that's traditional and nothing's traditional anymore. And when it comes to politics or elections, so, I'm always well informed and I try to make predictions that are based upon fact and evidence and, past anecdotes, but I also have to understand that there are wild cards that are in play in modern elections, and so I am acknowledging that.
There's certainly usually an incumbency bias, but there's also that kind of sometimes people say, kick the bums out, you know, let's get all new people or something like that. There's that as well.
Well, we saw that with the election of Mayor Grimm.
You
know, it was large.
It was a big change.
It was just largely, you know, supporting the mayor having more of a thumb on things as opposed to like an administrative position. So, you see these issues drive particular elections, and I don't really necessarily know that there's one driving this one other than maybe the bond, but everyone's in agreement about it. So,
yeah. Well, Ben Olson, publisher of the Sandpoint Reader, thanks for coming in. Thanks for giving us your sense on this coming election in particular, and anything you want to mention in this reader or one coming up that people should keep an eye out for?
Not a thing. It's Friday morning. It's pretty far away from my next deadline, so I'm leaving my head open for Halloween and frivolity tonight.
Good deal. All right. Well, happy Halloween, folks. Be safe out there. Happy Halloween, Chris.
You too, Jack.
Okay. Thanks for listening to North Idaho News of the Week. We'll go now to
drivers. Be careful. Watch for kids out there on the streets.
Watch for kids. Absolutely. Yeah, it is getting dark out there.
And ghouls.
And ghouls.